You're with us as we discuss early childhood education and social bonds. It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The American Academy of Pediatrics came out with guidance for school reentry last month, urging states to reopen schools because students learn better and form important social bonds in classrooms than online. It clarified and amended its stance days ago, saying, quote, "We must pursue reopening in a way that is safe for all students, teachers, and staff." Are you a parent or child caregiver? What are your concerns for kids returning to school this fall? How has the pandemic affected your child's education? We're at 800-642-1234. Travis Wright is an associate professor in the Department of Counseling Psychology in UW-Madison School of Education. Travis, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. Glad to be here this morning.
So most children across Wisconsin have not seen their teachers, their classmates in person since March. What are the mental health effects of an extended period of isolation for younger children?
You know, I think it really depends on what children are experiencing when they're away from school and also the types of connections that they've been able to maintain with teachers and peers during the physical separation. I know that many districts in the state have done a terrific job of taking advantage of online options. In my own community, the teachers actually did drive-by several times so that our students could sort of, from a safe distance, see their faces and know they were thinking about them. And so I think some children have actually managed to feel relatively connected despite the separation, while other children have experienced far more separation and, you know, feelings of abandonment. They haven't heard from their teachers. They haven't had contact since March. And young children in particular don't have a lot of control over when and how they access other people. And so many of them are feeling quite disconnected right now.
I noticed that days blur together and there's a lot of confusion with them is asking, is this a school day? Is this a school day? Every day, that same question. How do you start to approach that confusion?
As you very rightfully pointed out, young children really struggle to have a concept of time. And so one of the ways that we help them begin to develop that capacity is through consistent routines and schedules. And so I think it's really important for parents and caregivers to develop a daily routine, a daily schedule, and to sort of write it on the refrigerator, post it in the room, remind children sort of where they are in the day. Encourage them to refer back to the schedule so that kids do have a sense of control and a sense of how to orient themselves to the time in the day. So I think that developing some standard routines and some rituals can help children feel more anchored in these really uncertain times.
You research trauma in particular. How might children who have already experienced trauma in their life, how might they struggle here during the pandemic?
Yeah, these are the little ones that I'm really concerned about right now. Trauma fundamentally changes the way children view the world. And so instead of the world being a place of possibility, children start to assume that bad things are going to happen to them. And they experience a lot of fear and anxiety about the unknown. And these are certainly scary, unknown times. And so kids that have already experienced trauma, I think, are potentially very triggered right now. They're experiencing a lot of fear and a lot of anxiety because they are going to assume that things are going to get worse before they get better. And conversely, many kids who've experienced trauma also develop an inner sense of badness. So they start to believe that they're bad. And so bad things are happening to them because they deserve it. And so we actually have sort of multiple stressors that are intersecting at the same time. So not only are we having sort of a public health pandemic and children are literally afraid of their bodies and hearing lots of stories about grief or loss, and forget the fact that many children in our country have actually lost people that they love and care about to COVID. So lots of kids are experiencing grief and loss, fear of grief and loss, but children have also heard about and witnessed riots and violence in our communities. They've experienced family financial stress and strain. Parents are more elevated and escalated. And so children, even if children have been protected from sort of the events that are happening in the world, they are likely interpreting their parents' stress and anxiety as being something that they've caused. And so there is a potential that children will kind of internalize a sense of badness if they're exposed to a lot of stress and ambiguity right now.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Travis Wright, an associate professor in counseling psychology in UW-Madison School of Education. We're looking at the mental health and well-being of young children, early childhood education, and the impact of the pandemic. Taking your questions at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Karen now, who's joining us from Eau Claire. Hi, Karen.
I just want to say that my kids went to a small Christian day school and they only had just like 7 kids in the class. And, you know, I've been thinking, because I'm a grandma now, so I don't have kids in school, but honestly, I think there's going to be a huge benefit to having smaller class sizes and having those desks farther apart. I really think those kids are going to get more attention while they're at school. Not that they don't get good attention while they're at school. I don't want any teachers to out there to think, well, we're not doing our job, because I'm not saying that. But I just know that we all have always wanted smaller class sizes. And this is just one of the positive things that can come out of it. You know, I think it's going to be hard for having the kids at home on the other days. I feel bad. I'm hoping that I can help my grandson with that. But, you know, that's a positive, I think.
Karen, thank you for those insights. Travis, you know, what Karen is referring to is that hybrid model where kids go to school on a different schedule, alternating days, so you can cut down the number of students in the classroom.
Yes. So I think that it is important to keep in mind that children are incredibly resilient, and many of them will be able to adapt. And I think it's also important to look at the potential benefits of these challenges. So I agree with Karen that they're, you know, that the small class sizes and more focused attention could be a potentially valuable benefit for children. I also think that we have to kind of think about how kids are going to experience that. So one of the things that kids do in school is they learn to come together, and we help them sort of think about how to connect with each other, how to feel close to each other. And teachers use their bodies and proximity to help regulate children and to help children feel good about themselves. I think it's going to be a very different experience when the classroom is organized around distance and separation rather than closeness and proximity. And so I think it's going to be really important to think about how do we message that? How do we help children understand what it means to be friends and to maybe be afraid of each other? You know, I'm also really concerned about how teachers becoming ill potentially could affect the way children feel about themselves. If children feel responsible, if children lose a teacher, or if a teacher becomes ill because of what was happening in the classroom, I think those are going to be some really complicated conversations for children. I also think that we have to think about teachers, and many teachers are feeling quite fearful and ambivalent about being forced to return to the classroom. And so I think that's going to potentially shift the way they interact with kids. So instead of welcoming kids to them, I think some teachers may spend a lot of energy thinking about how to push children away from them, not even intentionally, but just because they're quite afraid and ambivalent. And so I think there are going to be some very complicated dynamics in classrooms. And so I think we really have to think about how to support teachers and children in understanding what it means to be together in these times.
Let's bring in another call now. Phil is with us from Mount Horeb. Hi, Phil.
Hi. I'm a remedial tutor, have been for 25 years, and I work with lower performing students. I have found that unless some of the lower performing students are highly motivated, they will not be able to maintain a focus that will enable them to concentrate and pay attention to the material being delivered online. I am deeply concerned about how our society is going to address this issue. I do appreciate your guest's previous remarks about the psychological and emotional factors of children, because that's going to be critical in this new age.
Phil, thank you for bringing that to the table. Travis, what would you say there?
Yeah, I agree with Phil, and these are the kids that I'm most worried about, the ones for whom interacting remotely is most challenging. And what I would say is, perhaps rather than thinking about how do we bring all the children together in the classroom, we think about how do we tailor responses to kids who have differential needs. And so perhaps there is a home visiting model, or perhaps it would be safer to bring one or two kids to the classroom for 1 or 2 hours a day so that they can get direct one-on-one focused attention that children actually don't typically get in a classroom when they're competing for 24 or 25 other children. And so I think the tutoring model might actually be a really nice model. And so it could be that there are kids who would be able to access one-on-one support from a teacher that typically don't get that type of support. So maybe rather than thinking about how to get all the kids in the classroom some of the time, we really think about how to triage and dedicate resources to the kids who need them the most.
There are parents out there who say, you know, it takes a lot of education and training to be an educator, to be a teacher. And some parents are saying, we're not cut out for this. How do we keep the learning going, especially if parents are working during the day?
Yeah, absolutely. We certainly feel this way in our house. I am an educator, and my husband and I still struggle to balance the learning needs of our kids with their own jobs. So I definitely feel the stress and strain. One thing I can say is that a routine has definitely helped as our children have learned more about the daily expectations and the daily routine. It's actually been less work for us to kind of to manage and navigate their learning. We've also been very blessed that our district has provided very clear and helpful lessons and lesson plans, and the teachers have been available for support. I know that every child in every district has not had that resource available, but I do think that something that could be happening at the state level is that state officials might be able to look at places in the state that have developed really successful online curriculum, and rather than each teacher or district having to develop their own, maybe thinking about ways to disseminate those resources so
more
that teachers
widely.
Could... Yeah, absolutely.
Talking about the social bonds formed in elementary school age with Travis Wright, teaches in the UW-Madison School of Education. Taking your responses as well, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Since schools closed in March, our kids have been going without some of the experiences that have a big role in their social and emotional development. Playing tag at recess, sharing lunch with friends, asking their teachers all sorts of curious questions, and getting that thoughtful answer. Researchers are concerned about the reduction in social interactions amid the pandemic that could harm mental health. How are you talking with your kids or your grandchildren about school in the fall and what the months ahead might look like? What do you say to questions you simply don't know the answer to? We're at 800-642-1234. Travis Wright is an associate professor in counseling psychology in the UW-Madison School of Education and stays with us. Travis, let's talk about that COVID slide. How does this extended time away from the school building, how does that affect learning outcomes and learning loss?
This is unprecedented. And so I don't think we know exactly how profound the impact is going to be, but we do know that typically there is a summer slide, and it would certainly be magnified in this case. My gut is that I think this slide will mirror what we typically see, in that kids that have fewer resources are probably going to experience the greatest slide. But because of the differential support that all kids are getting at home right now, I think that we're going to see very uneven, classrooms are going to be much more uneven in terms of where learners are when everyone is back in the room. And so it'll take some time to help everyone sort of catch back up. But what typically happens is that children are very resilient. And so when sort of given the opportunity to sort of be exposed to the appropriate material, they tend to rise to the challenges. Some things I would suggest that we all kind of do at home right now to help mitigate the slide is to read as often as we can to children and with children. Really encourage them to just to consume as much reading as possible, and to write and to make art as much as possible. All of that fosters their thinking. Having conversations with kids. So on your lunch break, taking a walk, if your child has been all morning playing the video game, sort of stop the technology, take a walk, ask your child questions, ask them to think about things. this is a great time to implement family dinner and other family rituals that really center around conversations, questions, things that provoke children to think, to problem solve. Those are great ways to minimize the impact of the slide. And really limiting the amount of time that children are spending playing video games. If children say they're bored, that's actually a good thing. Tell them to figure out a way to be unbored and don't use a phone or a pad or a tablet or a TV to solve the problem. Ask them to get outside and to be creative. And we know historically that these are all strategies that help minimize children's academic slide.
So when learning is all online, delivered online, virtual, can you gauge where a learner is at? Can you customize the curriculum in any way to meet the needs of that learner?
Absolutely. It is, I think much of it depends on the pedagogy and the teacher, and also much of it depends on who's facilitating the learning at home. But paying attention to children's questions, children have a really good innate sense of what they know and what they don't know. And so watching children try to solve the problems, listening to the way kids are making sense of the questions, giving them a little piece of information to help refocus their attention, supporting them in being successful to build their confidence. So as parents, really just listening to your child, taking very seriously their questions, noticing their struggles. This is a great time to actually reach out to teachers for coaching. So teachers may not actually be able to do as much one-on-one with each child, but they can actually support parents in coming up with strategies to differentiate the learning. And many teachers are actually differentiating curriculum. I know a number of educators are still maintaining sort of leveled groups. And so kids that are in different places are meeting in small subgroups during the week. And so I think with a lot of focus, support, it is possible for kids to continue learning even in the midst of this pandemic. One of my own children is a challenged learner. She has a very hard time reading, and the chance to sort of work with her more closely as parents has really helped us understand her struggles more in a more direct way. And so we've actually been able to become better advocates for her, reaching out to the teachers, reaching out to the district, asking for resources. And because she is getting one-on-one attention every day with people that love her, we've actually seen her confidence grow as a reader, and her reading has improved over the course of the social isolation.
Oh, that's interesting. As caregivers, we may have a much better insight now, having the kids at home, exactly where they are in their education, because we're trying to deliver it as best as we can, and we're seeing them more often.
Absolutely. You know, that has been a real gift. I mean, this is my day job. This is my life's passion. And this concentrated time to really focus on my own child's learning has allowed me to understand where she is in a way that I wasn't quite sure of before. You know, we've always been very active parents, but when you're actually taking responsibility for someone's learning every day, you are able to see what they're really good at and what they're struggling with in a way that is very different than a teacher report or sort of a grade that comes home at the end of the week or the learning period.
We're talking with Travis Wright, an expert on teaching students who have experienced trauma. We're looking at student-teacher relationships, early childhood education amid the pandemic, with you at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Terry now, joining us from Menominee Falls. Hi, Terry.
Hi.
Hi.
Yeah, I just want to say I'm a registered nurse. I was a nurse for about 16 years. Adolescent psych nurse, and then I'm a guidance counselor in middle school for the last 20 years. So I've done a lot of, just because it's an interest of mine, having a medical background, I've done a lot of research on COVID, and recent evidence suggests that it transmits aerosolized, which can travel 20 feet and hang in the air for 3 hours. That, along with a recent surge, I'm just really concerned that if you put, you know, in my middle school would be 500 people together, that it's going to spread teachers, kids, extended family members of the kids and the teachers are going to contract COVID, and the mental health impact of that on kids and staff and everybody else is going to be very traumatic. My opinion is we do virtual until the vaccine comes out, maybe in 6 to 8 months. It's pretty fast-tracked right now. Make sure everybody doesn't die, and then bring kids back to school.
Terry, thank you for your thoughts and your work. Travis?
You know, I think I tend to agree with Terry. We just don't know enough about the virus to understand the long-term implications for children's bodies, that I feel like taking a gamble with their most precious resource is just too dangerous. I think that many of our 25% or more of our teachers are over age 50. Early childhood educators are kind of the same. And so I think that we are going to place tremendous risk. We're going to place people that are very important in our society at risk without fully understanding the long-term implications. And so rather than thinking about how to get all the kids back to school, I think we should be spending our time thinking about how to tailor support and offer the highest quality distance learning opportunities possible, and how to triage sort of library school buildings so that kids who can't access technology, kids who aren't safe at home, parents who are really stressed and need respite care, that they have places for their children to go and be safe, rather than sort of placing all of our kids at risk by rushing back to the schools too quickly before we fully understand the impact of the virus on their bodies. You know, with social technology, with, you know, family connections, with conversations with relatives, with Zoom, children can have lots of meaningful social interactions. We live in a world where kids are comfortable interacting virtually. And I think really using the technology that we have to support them in their social emotional learning is fine. In the meantime, they're incredibly resilient. They're going to learn how to develop those social skills when they are given the opportunity again. But in the meantime, I think we have to keep them safe.
Travis, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Travis Wright is an associate professor in counseling psychology at UW-Madison. Just ahead, it is On Point. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.